بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله محمد.
First of all, it's an honor and I'm very delighted to be able to share a few days with you, brothers and sisters. The topic which, inshallah, I'll be speaking about the next 3 or 4 nights, it's a topic which actually you have given me, the board has given me, and they told me to speak about how to bring up children. It's not a theme I usually speak about, but since they did insist that the community would like to learn more about this, I will humbly present some findings for you. But I have to first give a small introduction to this theme. Can you imagine any given action, call it X0, committed at a particular time, call that time T0. It's a bit tricky, if you just bear with me here. Some of the introduction will be like this. Imagine any given action, X0, which is actualized at time T0. For X to actualize and to be realized, there were a number of actions preceding it which makes X be realized. Without those actions, X at time zero would not be actualized. So it had a number of preceding actions. Then those preceding actions, if you go one step back, they had preceding actions which made those actions come into actualization. And then keep on going back. You keep on going back. There's no beginning. You never stop anywhere. Because creation always was. Actions always were. This material realm of existence even is infinite, from pre-eternity to post-eternity. So, when a given action right now is realized, this given action has a number of infinite pre-eternal parameters which has influenced X0 at T0 right now to come into being. It's incredible if you think about it. Since pre-eternity, even a drop of a leaf many years ago has an influence on an action you did right now. But the farther away you go back before T0, the degree of influence that those actions have vary quantitatively and qualitatively. The nearer the actions are to T0, the more the influence. The further away they are, usually the influence is less, usually. And that's why with astrology and astrologers, and with palm readers and palmistry, when they predict the future, and they may be right in many instances, because it's a science, it's based on this principle, that the past influences the future. And when they study certain elements, they can tell the future. When they study the stars, when they study the lines on the palms of hands, they know many things that they can predict, but it's never 100%. And that's why it's not allowed for them to claim such a thing. Why isn't it 100%? Because they've only studied those parameters which are very near preceding that t, x action at t0. They don't have knowledge since pre-eternity with all the parameters which has an influence on that future action. They don't have that knowledge. If someone had that knowledge of all the pre-eternal causes, they could say, they can tell you. For example, the imams had such a knowledge. The potential is there to be in unity with Allah's knowledge. Now why did I give this introduction? Because based on this principle, that actions of a given time influence the future, when it comes to children, Islam, based on this principle, has now given protocols for child rearing for the preconception period, for the conception period, for gestation, 9 months of gestation in the mother's womb, for the time of birth, for the 2 years of breastfeeding. All these Islam has given protocols, because all the protocols, if abided by, will have an effect on the future child. It's based on this protocol, based on this principle. Everything is in continuity with one another. We have to sort out the precursors of child rearing and child nurturing. If we commit the precursors and abide by them properly, the result will be proper. In proportion to the extent that you fail in relation to those actions, the fruit will not be ripe or fresh. So even pre-conception, Islam has given a number of protocols. For the time of conception, Islam has given a number of protocols. For 9 months of gestation, which may be the most important influential parameter for the future child, Islam has given a lot of instructions, a lot of prescriptions. For 2 years of breastfeeding, it shouldn't be compromised. Why? Islam has given protocols why. Has given the reasoning why breastfeeding is important. And these aren't just physical reasonings, spiritual reasoning. All of them are spiritual, essentially. Now there may be physical benefits here and there, but the aim is spiritual. And then from 0 to 7 years, Islam here too is given a certain protocol of nurturing the child between 0 and 7 years. Still, the child's destiny is not in the hands of the child yet. And then from 7 to 14, here too, Islam has given a new set of instructions. We'll go through all of them, inshallah. And then from 14 to 21, another set. From 7 to 14, the child is beginning to rationalize and intellectualize. Destiny is partially in their hands. After 21 now, it's mostly in their own hands now. But until 21 years of age, the destiny of this poor child, on the whole, for the larger part, wasn't in the hands of the child. It was in the hands of other than the child. From the ancestors, coming all the way down to the grandparents, to the parents, and especially the mother, and the breastfeeding mother, and then slowly with the schooling, and so on and so forth. So, here, how are we going to nurture this child? So it's important that we abide by the instructions which Islam has given pre-conception. The No one, we may never be able to do everything. But everyone to their own bit. And there's no need to judge other people that they're failing in this regard or they're not failing. Everyone just evaluates themselves. And everyone does their own bit. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu qu anfusakum wa ahlikum nara. O you who believe, O you who have iman, protect, observe carefully, protect, guard yourselves and your families from fire. Now, families includes your children primarily. Protect them. This shows it's a duty for the believers. You shouldn't take the role of child nurturing as a simple matter. Why is it for your education and for university and for finding a job? You do everything to maximize your opportunities. But when it comes to child nurturing, you take things for granted. So here, the verse explicitly indicates, at least, that this is something necessary. لَعَنَ اللَّهُ وَالِدَيْنِ حَمَلَ وَلَدَهِمَا عَلَى أُقُورِهِمَا. May Allah curse those parents who nurture their children in a manner that the children disown the parents. You've all heard of aqul walidain, the disowning of the parents in relation to the children. With the parents, because of certain things that the children do, they detach from their children, cut all ties from their children, and want nothing to do with them. Although, that's not something good for parents to do. And they would be creating their own hell if they actually wholeheartedly do such a thing. But also the children have to be careful not to do anything for parents to do that. That would be a sin. However, in this tradition, it's the other way around. That sometimes, because of the way children were nurtured by the parents, the children disobey Allah as a result of the nurturing that the parents did, and Allah will blame the parents. لَعَنَ اللَّهُ وَالِدَيْنِ. This again, this tradition indicates that parents should treat this as a simple matter. It has consequences for them. Now sometimes parents do everything which was within or most of their responsibilities, and the children may, for reasons outside the jurisdiction of the parents' nurturing, the children may, they go astray. That's not the parents' fault. But sometimes it is the parents' fault. Okay, now, before I go through all this, there are some small points I want to mention. First of all, I'm going to give general principles. I'm trying to refrain from entering the particularities. But sometimes, especially when we have a Q&A session maybe during the weekend, we can enter those. But for now, I want to go through some general principles given in Islam. Some of you who have passed the parenting stage, just because you haven't committed certain actions, I don't want anyone to feel regret or remorse. You shouldn't feel like that. We all fail in certain areas in life, more or less, so I don't want to upset anyone. Everyone just has to try and do their bit. Islam has given instructions. I've given the different phases in one's life. Some of them will speak more about, some of them will speak less about. But in preconception, before actually conceiving the child, before fertilization actually arises, what does that mean? Here, two important parameters for the preconception phase, which is in the hands of the parents, because there are other parameters too, but they're less in the hands of the parents. One is choosing your spouse. That's a preconception parameter in relation to the child. Something like what Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam did when he wanted to choose the mother of one who is to accompany his son Imam Hussein in the plains of Karbala. He chose Ummul Baneen with a particular guideline in mind, from a particular tribe with particular traits. So choosing your spouse, choosing your wife, choosing your husband, you have to show some effort here, because this has a role in relation to the nurturing of your child. You can't choose just anyone. Even though in fiqh, in the letter of the law, it may be jayiz, permissible, to choose any Muslim, but we want to spiritually bring up our children and nurture them in the best possible way. Here, fiqh may not answer to many needs, because fiqh is related to what is halal, haram, wajib, haram, mustahab, makruh. Many actions don't fit in those categories. It's beyond those categories, especially in relation to ethics and in choosing and having a practicing an ethical guideline. It's outside the jurisdiction of fiqh.
صلى على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
تزوجوا في الهجر الصالح فإن الإرقى دساس. Marry into righteous families. The wife or the husband, are they of a righteous family? Do they have esala? Do they have strong roots? Because verily roots influence. It's that source, it plays a role, it influences. Don't just look at the spouse to be. Look at the family too. Look at the ethical traits in the family. Look at the roots of the family. How do they behave? How do they speak? How do they transact? Especially look at, according to traditions, do they lie? Are they trustworthy? When they promise, they keep the promise. These traits are the most important when you look at the family of the spouse-to-be. But if you only look at the spouse-to-be, you're being deceived. Well, it depends on which features of the spouse-to-be. If you only look at her or his educational qualifications, academic qualifications, and that's your main criterion, no, that's a failure. You only look at their job, a failure, you failed. They may be a good spouse, but you didn't go through the protocol. The protocol said, look at the families. Are they righteous and with firm roots, with firm traits, righteous traits, ethical traits, especially the lying, the trustworthiness, the promises they make. You have to get to know them. see what people say about them, especially in these ethical traits. It's important. But if you only look at the job, look at the education, they may still be lacking in those traits. We have many unethical doctors today. We have many unethical businessmen today. So the job and education, it's important, but it's not the main prerequisite that you have to look after. Sometimes, for example, someone may be illiterate, it's possible. But the family has roots, their ethics is strong. Although, there we have to enter another discussion, the discussion of equivalence and kuf. There has to be a kuf and equivalence between man and woman too. But still, the point is the roots of the family is important. Why does Islam pay attention to this? It's not only because they will be a good spouse for you, but in the child nurturing process, it has an effect on that also. For example, another tradition reads, تَخَيَّرُوا لِمُتَفِكُمْ. Choose properly for your embryos, the fertilized embryo, that which is to be gestated, your child to be. Choose carefully, properly, تَخَيَّرُوا. خير, choose. فَإِنَّ النِّسَاءَ, verily women, يَلِدَانَ, they give birth, أَشْفَاهَا إِخْوَاتِهِنَّ وَأَخَوَاتِهِنَّ. That which they give birth to resembles their brothers and their sisters. The genes pass. So you look at the brothers, look at the sisters of the mother. See, look at their traits. Your child is going to share a lot of those traits. So here's just one example. We have many of these kind of examples. So choosing the family, choosing the spouse because of the family, that is one of the important parameters in the preconception. In child rearing. Another, and as I say, there are many traditions in this, but if we go through all the traditions, it may take a lecture in itself. The traditions go through which traits that you have to look for and which those that you don't have to, but I've mentioned the more important ones. Another important parameter, the second of the two which I want to mention, that is very important and plays a significant role in the preconception phase, having an effect on the child to be, is that of food. The food that you consume, is it halal or not? How did you earn it? Here, Islam has, again, a very long list of certain instructions. And the instructions that they give also points to the fact that what you eat, when the child is in the process of being generated, that which you've eaten has an effect on the child. However, it's not only physical food which is meant. This food, this ta'am, also has spiritual elements to it too. Spiritual food. And I'll explain what that means in a minute. But in relation to the physical food, for the men, things which are given in the traditions in a generalized way. Sometimes the tradition, the imam is giving the specific prescription to a particular man. And you can tell it's a specific prescription from the context of the tradition. There, you can't generalize that. these books which just translate the traditions of the Imams in medicine, if they don't explain it carefully, they do a disservice. Because people just read it and they practice it. And it may have a bad effect upon them. But sometimes the traditions in the domain of medicine that the Imam gives is generalized. And this can apply to everyone. And you can practice and execute them. For example, for men, if they consume pomegranates and quinces on an empty stomach before conception, let's say 1 or 2 months before, at least, and they become accustomed with this particular action, the traditions say, hasuna waladuhu. The offspring will be good, of good traits, both physically and innerly. So, then, that's very explicit. Or, for example, consuming products of wheat and barley, mainly for the man. It applies for the woman too, but here, for the man. لا يولد لكم إلا لقوي. You won't, that which is given birth to is nothing but a strong offspring. Now this being strong applies in both the outer and the inner dimensions. Or also for men, if their diet is pivoted by meat and eggs before conception, it's spoken of very highly. So all these are very general instructions given, because it says whoever consumes, whichever man consumes. From this we see it's a general prescription that can apply for everyone. For women too, we also have many traditions with certain foods in a generalized manner. Quinces and pomegranates also apply to women. Chicory, salad leaves also are said to be very effective. And melon with cheese. And there may be other things. One tradition I saw today, it wrote Loban. I wasn't sure what Loban meant in Arabic. I'm not sure if anyone here knows, but I have to check it out. I didn't have a dictionary, but I would check that up. But that was also another tradition which spoke very highly of it. And also in some traditions it says, "La ta'kul al-harama." Don't consume haram. So, with the halal, yes, you can consume anything halal, but these certain foods, for men and women, they have been given a kind of priority. But in general, haram foods you have to refrain from. Now, haram, either it means the physical harams, which is the meat of pigs, blood, animals not slaughtered Islamically, and other foods which are definitively haram according to the Sharia. You have to refrain from that. Why do you have to refrain from that? Because they're haram and they lead to haram consequences in the child. For example, pig meat is haram because it leads you to acquire pig attributes. That's why pigs are haram to consume. Dogs are haram to consume. Predators are haram to consume. Because then you will become a predator. And then the mother who is generating this child, there's a unity between the mother and the child. The woman is generating this child. The woman is generating the soul of the child. And so with these foods, the haram effects of the foods which are spiritual will be passed on to the child. But we have spiritual haram foods also. And that is the worldly attributes. When people are drowned in the worldly life, when the Quran says "Hurrimat alaykum al-maytata," forbidden for you, haram for you is the carcass, the dead animal not slaughtered Islamically. Yes, superficially that's referring to that animal which isn't slaughtered Islamically. It just died by itself. It's haram for you. But the traditions explain the esoteric and botany meanings of the meta, and they say ad-dunya jifatun. The dunya is the rotten thing, the decayed thing, you know, an animal or anything else. And here, if you incorporate the worldly life within you, that is haram spiritually. Not from a fiqhi point of view, but from an ethical and spiritual point of view, you're incorporating haram within yourself and to the child. And there, yes, many people may fail. When Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, "Mole'at butunukum min al haram," to the enemy, your insides have been filled with haram. It wasn't only the haram of the Sharia, the superficial haram, because the enemies then, they wouldn't eat haram meat. They would abide by the Sharia. They would do their salat, they would do their fasting. Many were fasting on that day, but they failed in the spiritual food, where they filled themselves with harams like the world. Shim, yes, it was a matter of prestige, power, love of the glitter of the worldly life. This he was drowned in. And so these harams too you have to look at. Or in the same tradition, لَا تَأْكُلِ الْحَرَامَ وَلَا تَلْبَسِ الْحَرَامَ. Also, don't wear haram. What does that mean? That also has a superficial meaning, a zahir, and a batini meaning. The zahir is clothing which you buy with haram money, that's one. Clothing which you're not allowed to wear. For example, clothing which is specific to a culture of kuf. You're not allowed to wear those kind of clothing. Why aren't you allowed to wear those kind of clothing? Because that kuf will permeate through you. We have a story, Qisas al-Qur'an, where when all the people of Pharaoh, when they drowned, with the ocean parting and then coming back and drowning them all, one of the people of Pharaoh, one of them didn't drown. And then Nabi Musa alayhi salam said to Allah, "Why didn't that one person drown?" And then the answer came was that the person who didn't drown was the Pharaoh's jester, you know, the kind of clown in the palace. And the reason was that when the Pharaoh was depressed, he would make fun of Nabi Musa by wearing the clothing of Nabi Musa, that type of clothing which Nabi Musa alayhi salam would used to wear, and speaking like Nabi Musa. The point was, when Nabi Musa knocked on the palace entrance to speak with the Pharaoh, all the soldiers laughed, looking at the clothing, saying, "Who are you? wanting to see the king, the pharaoh, and they laughed at that. He would simulate that episode and wear the same clothing and say, I want to see the pharaoh, using the voice of Nabi Musa. Now, he was a jester, he was making fun. Allah says to Nabi Musa, he used to wear like you and speak like you. It has effects. It has effects. Here the effect was his life being elongated more. Now if you wear clothing which is specific to, it has to be specific to God. Today most clothing is common to Islamic and non-Islamic cultures. But if it's specific to a non-Islamic culture, that kind of clothing would be haram, according to fiqh, and the rationale being, it has an effect spiritually upon you. Traces of kufr will slowly diffuse through you. For having children too, be careful. Don't wear, this is all preconception, but don't wear haram. Also, another spiritual meaning of not wearing haram is, and this is extracted from the Holy Quran, don't wear unethical traits. Don't wear your soul. Don't garment your soul with unethical traits. In chapter 7, verse 26, your Bani Adam, قَدْ أَنزَلْنَا عَلَيْكُمْ لِبَاسًا يُوَارِي سَوْآتِكُمْ وَرِيشًا. O offspring of Adam, verily we've sent down upon you, we've given you clothing so you cover your private parts, and as a finery, a vesture, a kind of adornment for you to wear. But then the Quran adds, وَلِبَاسُ التَّقْوَى ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ. The clothing of taqwa, that's better. Taqwa has to be clothed. And taqwa is a broad concept. It has a superficial element to it. It also has ethical elements to it. You have to clothe yourself with taqwa. And for preconception, this is important when the child-to-be is actualized. And then the verse, the tradition reads, وَلَا تَأْسَ اللَّهُ, and don't disobey Allah. So the tradition starts with these three. No haram, don't eat haram, don't wear haram, don't disobey Allah. لَأَنَّ, I was giving the reason. لَأَنَّ اللَّهُ تَعَالَى يَقُولْ لِإِبْلِيسِ. Because Allah, the Almighty, said to Iblis, and now the verse of the Holy Quran is read, وَاسْتَفْزِزْ مَنِ اسْتَطَعْتَ مِنْهُمْ بِسَوْتِكَ وَأَجْلِبْ عَلَيْهِمْ بِخَيْلِكَ وَرَجِلِكَ. Then the next clause is the clause which I want to focus on. وَشَارِكْهُمْ فِي الْأَمْوَالِ وَالْأَوْلَادِ. This course. In the beginning, Allah is saying to Iblis, he's giving Iblis a set of instructions to abide by. Please startle, or knock them down, knock the people down, startle them. Those of them that you can, with your voice in waswasa and temptations, rally and attack against them with your horsemen and infantry, with those who are working in your cause, be they jinn or men. But here, washarikhum fil amwal wal awlad, be in partnership with people in relation to their children and their wealth, but the children is important here. Don't do anything that Iblis has a role also in the generation of your child. That making Iblis a form of parent and partnership to you in relation to the child. If you have haram food with those haram consequences, Iblis has an influence. He's working in partnership with you in relation to this future child. Be it the physical, superficial haram or the spiritual haram. If you clothe in a haram way, the outer or the inner haram, Iblis is in partnership with you. And if you disobey Allah, Iblis is in partnership with you. You may abide by all the rulings in fiqh and through a legitimate marriage give birth to a legitimate child fiqh-wise. But when it comes to the batin, and the esoteric dimensions, even though you went the legitimate route superficially, you may be giving rise to an illegitimate, ethically illegitimate, spiritually illegitimate child. But you just rejoiced with sufficing with the superficial aspect. And that's something which is very important not to do. As Imam Khomeini rahmatullahi alayhi said, those who say that the Sharia is only the letter of the law, they are the shayateen on the tariq, on the path to Allah. Yes, it's step one, it's essential, but when you suffice with it and you don't go beyond, in addition to it, shahidkum. Be in partnership with such people in relation to your wealth, that's another discussion, and to your children. Okay. The next, that was preconception. And I won't say anything else on that. There are other things too, but I think these two are, they rank amongst the more important ones. The next is that of conception. And it's incredible how Islam has spoken so much about this. At the very time of conception, those few hours where fertilization is to arise and be realized, it's not a one-off event. Fertilization, it's a process, it takes many hours. In this process, from its beginning to its end, which isn't more than 24 hours, yes, here Islam has a lot of protocols. Or if one wants to be more precise, from the time of copulation, that act, intercourse, until the actual fertilization finishes, we're talking anything from 3 to 5 days. In this period, let's broaden it a bit here. But in this 3 to 5 day period, Islam has given a lot of protocols here. That's the reasoning here. One of those instructions is to read du'as before the act. For example, Allahumma jannibni shaitan, or jannib shaitan ma razaqana, distance the shaitan from Allah, distance him from our sustenance that we want to acquire now, and many other du'as that exist in the books of du'as. Why does Islam have a du'a for everything? The kitchen to the bedroom, leaving the house, coming, returning to the house, working, studying, for everything there's a du'a. because you'll be calling Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, if you don't want to recite the dua in Arabic, it's okay. But recalling Allah cleanses the soul. The soul is acting Allah-li. You're recalling Allah. And a soul which is being cleansed by the remembrance of Allah, that has effects upon the child. Because this child is going to be generated. In short, generation of the child is to happen. So the person doing the generating, here the man and the woman, especially the woman, that soul, the more pure it is, the more purer its generating will be. When we want to slaughter the animal, there too, there's a form of inshaAllah. When you say Bismillah, the person who's doing the slaughter has to say Bismillah. It has an effect. And there are many du'as that people do. However, there's one tradition that the Holy Messenger, and we're calling the Holy Messenger these nights because we're remembering his martyrdom and the martyrdom of other Imams during the next few nights. The Holy Messenger has given a long list of instructions for the night of conception, when the man and woman plan on conceiving. And this is an incredible, you know, list of things. And I haven't gone through this list before because it does enter many things, minute points, which one or two of them may not be suitable for children, but I don't think there are any young children like this. They may not understand, inshallah. But inshallah, I think, I'm not sure what the time is. I'll go through this list, inshallah, tomorrow. The list has many important aspects to it, superficially and the botany aspect. And just in case you feel it's not in the best interest to go through it, it's okay. But since you want to know about Islamic parenting, I thought this was important to go through it in depth. I haven't done it before in a lecture. But if you feel it's of use, I can go through it and inshallah we can do it. وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله وصحبه.